Well, there's a big question. Are we ever going to go back to the moon? We'll chat with Richard C. Hoagland about that when we come back. By the way, that picture of the Mars dolphin, whatever it might be, is up on our Twitter link at coasttocoastam.com. To find Twitter, if you're new to this, is just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, far right-hand corner. You'll see the little Twitter icon. You click that, and then off you go. Take a look at that picture. It's weird. It really is. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment with Richard C. Hoagland on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Richard C. Hoagland with us. Richard, last week they had a story about the president's 2013 budget and that NASA's budget was slashed for Mars exploration, but they want to shift funds to human spaceflight. I was a little confused with the way that reporter wrote the story. What's going on?
Well, everybody's confused. As I was saying before the break, all the insiders that I'm monitoring, some that I talk to, nobody can figure out what's going on because, George, they're missing the big puzzle piece. If you assume that the universe, the world, is the world that you see on CNN, none of this makes sense. But if you assume, based on the 30-some years that I've been doing this, that there is a hidden agenda of all, you know, behind what NASA does, which Mike and I document in exquisite detail in Dark Mission, then what's going on, starting back when George Bush suddenly, in the midst of the war on terror and invading Iraq, et cetera, when he announced we were going to go back to the moon, and then he appointed Mike Griffin to be the new NASA administrator, and Mike Griffin started out really good, and then things went totally off the rails because what Griffin proposed as going back to the moon was a timetable which was, you know, over almost a decade and a half long from 2004 to 2020 when we got to the moon originally in 9 years.
back in 1969 with that kind of technology.
Coming off John Glenn and his primitive heat shield problem, et cetera, et cetera. In 7 years. So that was the first kind of heads up, whoa, what's going on here? And then what Griffin proposed was that we had to do it by building NASA, two brand new, incredibly expensive, and technologically really impossible rockets to carry out the mission. And when Obama came into office, which was in 2008, he set up a commission, the Augustine Commission, headed by Norm Augustine, who was a, you know, well-respected executive in the aerospace industry. I think he used to run Lockheed Martin. And they had a blue ribbon panel with astronauts and, you know, political figures and celebrities and whatever, reviewing tons and tons of paper and data and testimony from witnesses, et cetera. They went all around the country. You know, did this witness thing in several different cities where the, you know, ordinary folks could actually, you know, give testimony.
The dog and pony show.
Come and stand in front of a mic. And the bottom line was, a recommendation of the president, you can't afford Griffin's plan, which was called Constellation. And it's too expensive. The budgets will never support it. It's too complex engineering-wise. It's too big. It's overkill. And the nation can't possibly carry it out in any reasonable time frame. And so Obama's next budget, if you'll remember, because we have discussed this extensively on this show, including I think we had a couple of panel shows on this, a complete change of direction for NASA.
Dramatic change.
Dramatic. Cancel Constellation. Cancel going back to the moon. Cancel big ticket items and focus on commercial, fostering a commercial space industry. Focus on developing cutting-edge technologies that, if they're matured in 5 or 6 years, will allow you to go a lot of different places without the huge budget overruns and cost problems that previous... I mean, NASA has tried a lot of different things since Apollo, and it's canceled every one of them. The only thing it hasn't canceled is the space station, and that's been basically because we didn't do it alone. We did it with international partners.
And we're kind of stuck with it.
And it's basically become an albatross because so much money has gone into the space station and so much money over the years has gone into the shuttle, which can only go to the space station and come home. that there was no money left over to go anyplace interesting, like back to the moon, onto Mars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the president, picking up on a recommendation of the Augustine panel, announces in his budget at the Cape, which was a couple years ago, that he was going to forget about going to the moon for the time being, focus on developing commercial carriers, just like primitive airlines back in the 1920s and 30s, and let them do the heavy lifting when it came to ferrying astronauts and cargo to and from ISS, the space station, and let NASA focus on exploration again. But in order to do that, it would have to do a five-year study of a rocket that would be able to would enable it to carry out such exploration. And it was called a flexible path, and there were howls from every quarter of the space community, from NASA, from fans, from fanboys.
You?
Well, I wasn't happy either, because I lived through the Kennedy era, as did you.
Yep.
And I know, and John Glenn said this just a couple days ago, at the age of 90, that he's extraordinarily concerned that there's no focus for the agency now by direction of the President of the United States, because there's no mission destination. There's no timetable. There's no deadline.
There's no goal.
There's no goal, and that doesn't excite anybody. It's like we're marking time. Well, this gets even worse when it came up to this year's budget. And as you said a few moments ago, inexplicably, NASA, by direction of the White House budget, has backed out of an agreement with the European Space Agency to be a collaborative full partner with ESA, the European Space Agency, in two missions to Mars in 2016 and 2018, which include a very big rover like Curiosity, the NASA rover, which is currently en route and will arrive in December of this year. And suddenly, without real warning or any excuse or rationale, NASA has said basically, oh, we can't do it. And instead, the resources, as you just said, are being focused on the human spaceflight program. But again, no goals announced. They're putting the money into building this rocket called SLS, which stands for Space Launch System, which would be the biggest rocket the United States has created since the Saturn V. And it's supposed to be expandable and scalable to where it goes through what they call Block 1, Block 1A, Block 2, Block 3, which are different phases of the technological development. By the 2030s, the 2036 timeframe, this rocket is supposed to be big enough and mature enough to carry astronauts, provided there's any money left over to do an actual mission, to Mars itself in 2036.
That's a long time away.
Which is incredibly long. Now, everybody's wringing their hands, and they don't understand the priorities, and they don't get the big, big picture, which is, folks, you're not getting the full story. This is merely the furniture being arranged, and I'm going to mix a metaphor here badly, on the deck of the Titanic in an effort to keep the Titanic from sinking. Because what we're not told is that all of the pieces that can be activated by the simple infusion of money, because the only reason that we're looking at 2036 for getting to Mars in this timetable is money. NASA currently, and this is what Newt Gingrich did not point out in the several times he's been discussing his proposal to have a moon base,
yeah,
by the end of his second term, and the shots that fired at that and the cries of anguish and the ridicule and all the usual nonsense heaped on someone who's making a pioneering statement. Gosh, can you imagine what they would do with Kennedy these days? Anyway, what no one understands is all of the pieces are on the board, and all it takes is something that is a game changer, something which is big enough to supersede all the usual politics and allow Congress to infuse NASA with the amount of money required to do what we used to do and completely change this generation like Kennedy did. Now, we don't have the Cold War anymore. We don't have the threat of bad commies. I mean, the Chinese are so weak when it comes to that portrayal. No one's really afraid of the Chinese getting to the moon ahead of the rest of us because, you know, been there, done that, and Mars is totally out of everybody's ken and all that. So our analysis is that what has been going on quietly between the Obama administration and both Democrats and Republicans in Congress is basically marking time until the game changer arrives.
And what is the game changer?
It will be, I believe, the announcement officially that extraterrestrial life exists nearby in the solar system. And so the only thing that would be equivalent to an appropriate response a la Kennedy and Apollo
is to go.
Would be a human mission with men and women going to Mars to look at it and bring it home themselves, which is why we don't need another unmanned robotic mission in cooperation with the Europeans in 2016 to 2018, because this is all going to happen before 2016.
Interesting. Now, this is not Steve Bassett-type disclosure of UFO visitations
like
that.
This is the safe way to do it.
This is spotting something somewhere.
Yeah, look, this is the most empowering way to introduce a whole bunch of people, the middle of the curve, the people who are listening raptly to Rick Santorum. All right, I won't go further into that. Those people have to be talked to in a language that doesn't scare them to death, that fits in with their worldview. And the only safe way politically, as I've been saying for decades, ever since we tripped over the Mars data at Cydonia, is for NASA, for this government, the White House, to someday grudgingly admit that we have found signs of an ancient civilization, ruins, with the owners long gone, on Mars, 35 million miles away at its closest approach, and to send human beings, to empower humans to reach out and explore it themselves.
Well, that would be dramatic, Richard. If they would announce, for example, we have spotted through orbiters and everything else a potential old city on Mars. We're pretty darn sure that's what it is. We need to send a human there in order to investigate. Well, I think people would rally around that.
Absolutely, and it would do everything that we did during the Kennedy years and then some, because remember, the whole Kennedy shtick was a confrontation publicly with the Russians. In this case, this would be a combined effort by all of humanity to reach out and figure out something affecting its own ancient history.
Now, would they actually think that there was a city there, or would they be making it up?
No.
Just to go.
Oh, look, we've got the photographs. We know there's all kinds of stuff.
Oh, you know there is.
Well, so does NASA. Come on. They're not stupid.
Well, I know, but they just haven't admitted it.
John Glenn tried to tell you the truth in 2001.
I mean, will they have the face on Mars, and they'll say that guy, Richard C. Hoagland, was correct?
And who cares? You know, it'd be nice if they did that. Ultimately, somebody someday is going to probably do that. I may not be around for that, although I'm going to give Shatner a run for his money. The point is, I think, George, and there's where the real news, and we're going to spend the last half hour discussing the implications of this. The news is, I think Curiosity is the rover mission that's going to do this, beginning in December of this year, 2012. Remember, 2012 was the year of the apocalypse, right?
That's right.
But
the
apocalypse
so-called
doesn't
apocalypse.
Mean what everybody thinks it means. What does apocalypse really mean? It means enlightenment.
So you think that they are going to actually announce that they've spotted something on Mars? Will it be old photos or something brand new?
No. They're sending this rover, which is the size of a VW, car, nuclear powered, to this amazing, bizarre structure taking up the center of Gale Crater.
Tell me about the structure.
It looks like a huge arcology. It looks like an incredible super civilization, type 2 civilization construct, like a super Martian apartment complex located in the center of this crater. And when you look at the detailed imagery, which I months ago put up on the COAST website, You can see the geometry of the rooms. You can see the honeycomb. You can see the walls, the partitions. Geometry, geometry, geometry.
This is not Photoshop now.
Not at all. This is directly from the NASA website. Now, this structure, this, you know, is obviously, if there's parts of it still reasonably intact, although it's incredibly ancient, you'd have to find out more stuff about it to go inside, even with a rover, right?
Mm-hmm, of course.
This rover is nuclear powered. If we had sent Spirit or Curiosity, which, by the way, there had been a plan to send those rovers to Gale Crater, which I found out about just a couple of days ago. It's not generally known, but that was all high on the list of targets for Spirit and Opportunity, which are the two rovers currently on Mars. Spirit is gone. The spirit of Spirit lives on, but it died somewhere in the Martian winter in the last couple of years. But Opportunity is still chugging across the surface. Those rovers, though, were powered by solar panels, by sunlight. If you sent them inside a structure, George, what would happen immediately? They'd run out of gas.
They couldn't do it.
They'd die because of lack of electricity. Curiosity, again, the size of a VW, is nuclear-powered. It can go anywhere, and the projections are... Are you sitting down? I know you pace.
Yeah, I do pace.
Okay. It could last 140 years.
Jeez.
Based on previous experience with SNAP nuclear power sources on Galileo, Voyager, the Navy transit satellites, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't have to last 140 years. All it has to do is last a few years, and it may find in this ancient structure, which is 100 miles across, you heard me right, 100 miles. Somebody built something 100 miles across. It's collapsed. The top of it is a perfect tetrahedron when you look at the images coming from NASA. All the clues are there, even coming out of the White House. The White House Christmas card this past year had major clues that this is the president's agenda. If this happens in his second term, which is why, well, we can get into the second term, you know, in the last half hour. I have some thoughts there that I might want to leave you with, a la our predictions about his first term,
mm-hmm,
4 years ago, 3.5 years ago. If this comes to pass, it will occupy a huge chunk of the second term. It will radically revolutionize the American economy, manufacturing, the can-do spirit, the idea that we are leaders and pioneers and the best and brightest on the planet once again. And it will kick off, because of a sudden infusion of money from the Congress, all the pieces, the rockets, the landers, the HABs, every piece of technology required to go and see this with human beings and bring back priceless ancient ET technology from Mars, from the ancient planet in the solar system whereby we somehow are connected, that they are the ancestors and we are the Martians, as I said on Fox, you know, a decade or more ago. All of that will be triggered if this scenario that we have been carefully tracking for months and months and months takes place, as I believe it's going to.
This is pretty dramatic stuff, Richard.
Well, look, we've had, since Obama took office, an incredible breakdown of the governmental system, right?
Yep.
Nothing can happen. It takes 60 votes in the Senate to even go to the damn bathroom. It takes a majority in the House, and the House changed hands in 2010. So you have Republicans in the House, you know, directing things. You have Democrats titularly, try saying that at 1227 here.
Better you than me. Hold on. We're going to take the break. We'll come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, we'll take a few phone calls with Richard C. Hoagland as well. Well, next hour, Douglas Hemp joins us with his work, Corrupting the Image, Angels, Aliens, and the Antichrist Revealed. That should be a fascinating moment. When we come back in a moment, we'll take some calls and continue our discussion with Richard C. Hoagland, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, our science advisor, author of Monuments of Mars, Dark Mission as well. Back with Richard on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Richard, before we take some calls here this half hour, let's wrap up here. and hit some topics that we haven't really touched on yet. What do we have out there?
Well, I wanted to reemphasize that this is like trying to read tea leaves in the middle of the night during an eclipse occulted by a black cat. It's awfully hard to do this and be credible, but I'm sticking my neck out because it's important. People need to know there are some amazing things in the offing, and all the data points say this is kind of what could maybe happen. And one of the indicators is, as I was saying before the break, since President Obama was elected, nobody's wanted to cooperate with him. I mean, it's gotten to the point where he says, if I say the sky is blue, someone will say it's pink. All right? That, by the way, is a very interesting reference to Mars, obliquely.
That's true.
But this space authorization bill for NASA, which he signed in late 2010, which represented a compromise from his plan, which reinstated a heavy lift launch vehicle derived from the shuttle, which of course was retired in 2011, and is now the backbone of the SLS, the Space Launch System, the kind of rocket you would need, a Saturn V type system, to go to the moon and to Mars.
It's the only way right now.
It really is, because commercial can't be relied upon. You know, there's a lot of dreamers out there and commercial folks, you know, like Elon Musk and Bezos and some others have got great ideas, and there's been some test flights, but space is difficult and dangerous and hard. The technologies, the parameters of reentry alone, like with John Glenn, you can't cheat the laws of physics. And a manned capsule, which the Dragon capsule, which is Elon Musk's entry into the commercial, you know, spaceflight parade, that's got to survive the same physics and the same forces that John Glenn almost did not. Even though we're 50 years down the road, you cannot cheat the laws of physics. And that, as the industry has found, to their real, real sorrow many times, it's not as easy as it looks. NASA made it look easy, and it's not. It's expensive. And so far, there's nothing that will make a buck in space other than communication satellites, et cetera. That's now, right. Of course, when they get to the moon and they find all those artifacts and start selling them on the open market on eBay.
On eBay, they'll make millions.
Billions. I mean, look, I've got to create a gold rush for artifacts, but there's a philosophical problem. Do we really want to auction off our own heritage to the highest bidder? That's why you need a government program with a Smithsonian attitude that's going to preserve this stuff and not just simply, you know, sell it on the black market. The point I'm getting to, and I keep going around it, was in an era where nobody, Republicans and even a lot of Democrats, have wanted to cooperate with this president, the House and Senate Authorization Compromise Bill passed by unanimous consent, Republicans and Democrats. It is a shining beacon of cooperation, compromise, and going for a big picture. That right there should tell every politico that's watching this current Republican amazing season that something big is afoot and it's not natural. And my other point, and then we can go to calls, I'm going to make a absolute prediction.
All right.
Barack Obama is going to win a second term.
That's John Hogue says that too.
Why? Because the Republicans are deliberately throwing the race.
No, Richard.
Yes. Look, these people are not stupid. Romney's not stupid. Gingrich is not stupid. Santorum is not stupid.
But they all want to be president.
But do they all want to be president if someone else says, no, it's not time for you? Remember, we have documented over decades a deep ritual frame behind NASA and behind other parts of the federal government. If 2012 is meant to be the year of enlightenment, and Barack Obama, for whatever reason, is the chosen guy to make this happen, and nobody else can do it, the one who came closest was Gingrich when he basically said, by the end of his second term, moon base, and look what happened to him for getting out of line.
Oop, he's gone. Not quite gone, but he's down the rope.
These are very strong words, I know. I believe Obama is going to be president for 4 more years because it has been decided and you have all kinds of folks, you know, talking Illuminati, whatever. You know, it's been decided somewhere that he is the chosen guy to navigate us across this threshold. Well, why did Barack Obama get a Nobel Peace Prize before he'd done a damn thing to warrant a Nobel Peace Prize?
I know it.
So, look, Coast is supposed to be the last bastion of out-of-the-box thinking, George. If we can't formulate these scenarios seriously and tell people what to look for, then where else in the media are you going to find this kind of thinking laid out where everybody can join in and have a wonderful time telling me I'm totally nuts?
Let me ask you this before we take calls. How many Facebook followers do you have now?
Over 30,000.
Good for you.
That's not counting my friends. I have 5,000 friends.
How do they find you?
They just go to Facebook and Richard C. Hoagland, and it will take you right to my Facebook page. Or you can go to enterprisemission.com. There's a link to my Facebook page, the public page, the fan page, as they call it, right at the very top. I'd love to have lots of new people, because the conversation that I engage in, and I engage in a lot of conversation with folks that come over and want to talk to me. This is important, because if this is going to unfold the way I think it's going to unfold, it will save civilization. It will do all the things that we have to do to put America back as number one and to set a tone for the planet so that we, united as a human species, reach out and figure out who the hell we are by touching with human beings in a human spaceflight program that will be heir to the Apollo program that John Kennedy, you know, gave us because of his vision, that everybody can be proud of, and that will lift all boats. We need something as big as a war, but not a war. And this is it, if our scenario projections are accurate.
Let's hope it's not a war. Max in Denver, Colorado. We'll go to you first, Max. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I'd like to know about that face of Mars in your book, The Heritage of Mars, you were going to write years ago. And I want to know why you're not talking about UFO diaries, Hoagland. Where's those faces? This Mars reveal, a mad Mars, I want them.
Because I don't do UFOs.
You never did UFOs?
Nope.
How come you never got involved in UFOs?
Because it's a bottomless sinkhole. Years and years and years ago, when I was back at the museum in the days when John Glenn was just going into orbit, and I was invited on a local radio station to talk about, you know, ETs and UFOs and all that, because UFOs were very, you know, interesting back then. There have been some sighting in the Midwest, and the Air Force came out with the most cockamamie, absurd, idiotic explanation. And I realized at that point that this is a no-win scenario. This is the Kobayashi Maru. You'll never, you know, it's like the tar baby. You'll never get out of being dependent on official agencies to tell you the truth.
No, they won't tell you. That's what I keep telling Steve Bass. He's going to be on Thursday for an hour.
I understand. And Steve now is, look, Stephen is doing important work because he's keeping that subject politically out there.
He's keeping it going.
He got a response from the White House. Why did the White House even respond to him?
Well, it's because he had enough petitions, I guess.
Ah, but look who responded. It wasn't the president. It was this flaky intern who knew nothing about space or ETs or UFOs. And when push comes to shove at the right time, they'll be able to say it was a total plausible deniability. He simply didn't know what was really going on. So this is a multi-level puzzle. It's like a Chinese puzzle box. And Steve's got a part of it. We've got a part of it. A lot of other people have parts of it. This is a ticking clock, George. I think 2012 is the year, and I think the doorway whereby the human race finally gets to see the big picture is on Mars, waiting in Gale Crater with a spacecraft called Curiosity barreling toward Mars at several miles per second, eating up the miles even as we speak. And isn't it interesting that it's named Curiosity? Remember how Curiosity got tagged with
that's right,
with that poem, Curiosity Killed the Cat.
How close is Gale Crater to Cydonia?
It's on the other side of the planet.
The other side.
But if we got a nuclear-powered rover, it can go. It can go anywhere on Mars.
It looks like there was an ocean that used to be there.
Yes, there were two oceans, actually, at antipodal points that I worked out with the Mars tidal model many years ago. You can go to enterprisemission.com and just, or you can Google Mars tidal model, comma, Richard C. Hoagland, comma, Enterprise Mission, and it will take you right to this Mars paper we wrote, which describes those oceans and the role they play. Isn't it interesting that both of the rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, landed at the shores of those of that ancient ocean on opposite sides of the planet?
Yeah.
And they both reported extensive evidence of water that, and conditions conducive to life. And, of course, we found in some of the early imagery from Spirit, there are fossils that they ground to dust before our very eyes.
Next up, let's go to Hal, Pensacola, Florida, first-time caller. Go ahead, Hal. Thanks.
Hi, George.
Hey, how are you?
How's everything going?
All is well.
Very good.
And about to get better.
The reason I called, I was on Grand Turk Island during that three-orbit shot in the Grand Turk telemetry station tracking John Glenn on his
lucky
three-orbit.
You.
And I was going to ask Richard how old he said he was at that time.
I was 11. How old were you, Richard?
I was 13, 14, something like that.
How about that? I was 30 years old at the time.
And you're still with us, which means, George, we have help. We have hope.
That's right.
Yeah, I was in there tracking him when, and in fact, the signal from telemetry that went to the Cape came from our tracking center at Grand Turk Island.
All downrange.
Loose heat shield.
Yep. That was some exciting moments.
Did you have goosebumps, Hal?
Sure did. We thought we had lost him when he came in, and of course the heat shield burned away, and the air was on the space around the capsule at least was ionized to the point that we was twice as long getting acquisition of signals.
You thought he had passed on, huh?
Sir?
You thought he died?
We were all looking at one another, and we all had very long faces, I'll say that. We were in doubt that he had made it.
When you first heard him come back, it must have been like popping champagne, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed it was.
All right, Hal.
We were all so happy to hear that voice. Freedom 7.
I love it. That's a little bit of history right there, Richard.
It sure is.
Thanks, Hal. Let's go to Tony in Galax, Virginia. Welcome to the show, Tony. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. It's Galax, actually.
Galax.
G-A-L-A-X. Well, I was wanting to ask Richard. Richard, how are you?
I'm fine.
Well, that's good. I was wanting to ask you, you a question. And, George, I'd like your input a little bit about this.
All right.
And also, I'd like you to remember this question because this is something I'd like you to ask Ken Klein the next time.
Whenever he comes back, okay.
When he has something, when he comes back. Richard, I was wondering if you thought, I don't know if you're much, are you a Christian or do you believe in?
I used to be a Roman Catholic.
Okay, well then you probably would know my line of questioning here, but do you believe that Mars was the original Eden?
Well, now that's an interesting take. What do you think about that, Richard?
No, I think this is not a new idea. And
no, it's not.
You can make a really good case, yes, because for one thing, Adam comes from Adamu, which means red earth. And where do we find red earth?
Mars.
On Mars.
Of course, I still think Eden was probably around modern-day Iraq now.
Well, but you have to look at transliteration. If you have a storyline that extends across millions of years, and the refugees who finally get to Earth from Mars, they kind of replace name the locations from their own myths and legends they brought with them. So you have to read between the lines, and this is why mythology is such an extraordinarily difficult thing, and why Dan Brown's books. Are such bestsellers because people love the puzzles and the decoding in those Tom Hanks movies.
Well, Tony's right. It could have been.
It could have been.
It could have been.
And we will only know as we said to Bob Zubrin one night, when we go.
We won't know unless we go. We should make a bumper sticker out of that. Let's go to Toronto. Brian, welcome to the program on the international line. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey there.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure thing.
I was wondering, speaking of cryptic commentaries during late night comedies, I was wondering if Richard was aware of there being a couple of the classic symbols that I learned to scan for reading Dark Mission in NASA's encounter with Stephen Colbert a couple of years ago.
I'm not aware of the specifics. I've heard some rumors. There's just too much to follow. If you
elaborate on that,
want to elaborate? I'd love to hear it.
To make long story short, with what was going on, Colbert was trying to pressure NASA to name the new space station node after him.
After him, right?
I'm aware of that.
Get enough write-in votes. And anyway, William Gerstenmaier, who I believe was the head of space exploration, anyway, pretty high up, William Gerstenmaier made an appearance on Colbert while this was still going on, and he said this very weird thing at one point. He said, "We have a stuffed owl down on the tarmac to scare away the woodpeckers that sometimes like to build nests in the engine."
Huh.
Hmm.
I thought, it sounded completely out of left field and
irrational. Sounds really ritualistic.
The owl really stood out to me. It almost seemed like it stood out to Colbert, too.
Well, it sounded like Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
Which is a big 40-foot owl that they all dance around.
Yeah, they sure do.
Up in the Muir Woods. Alex should tell us something about that.
They sure do, indeed.
Yeah, for sure.
Symbolism seems to be
later
everywhere.
On, when they were going to, they came up with a compromise. They weren't going to name the node after him, and I figured they never would because they seemed to be so.
But he did get enough votes in, though, didn't he?
Oh, he had more than enough votes.
They
actually named guys a piece of exercise gear after him, and they made up this weird acronym, which is his initials, Colbert. So there is a Colbert exercise gadget in the space station named after him.
Richard, next time, my friend, be well. Richard C. Hoagland, head of the EnterpriseMission.com website. It's linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. When I come back in just a moment with our split program, Douglas Hemp joins us with his work, Corrupting the Image, Angels, Aliens, and the Antichrist Revealed. I'm looking forward to this, and I'll be right back.